We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's college football week number four. It was a bad night for Thursday night action. It was Tulsa at Temple, but tonight's not bad. You have a 7 p.m. kickoff. It's Florida Atlantic. 2-1, Lane Kiffin is the head coach. They go over to Orlando to take on the defending national champion and now 16th-ranked Central Florida Golden Knights, UCF. 2-0 on the year and a 13.5-point favorite. At 9 p.m. tonight, 10th-ranked Penn State, 3-0 on the year. They're at Illinois, 2-1. And then a big ball game, especially for Clay Helton in Southern Cal. Washington State comes to L.A. for a 10:30 kickoff on ESPN to take on the 1-2 Southern Cal Trojans that majorly need a win. So not a bad night of Friday night football, Diesel, but you won't catch any of it because you're headed down to Bon Secours Wellness Arena for your other job, you know, doing your show on 93.3 The Planet Rocks. It's the birthday bash. It's Shine Down and Godsmack. And I don't know, why do I get the feeling if one, you know, a great movie from back in the day, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Will you be right up your alley tonight with Godsmack, Shine Down, and is it Asking Alexandria, the third band in the group?
Yeah, tonight? That's right.
All right. I don't know. For some reason, I picture you like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, when he goes to meet the guy and he has to go through the headbanging bar across, you know, to get to the stairway. You know, he, by the time he gets to the stairway over here, he's completely different than when he ended. Is that you tonight, or is this just totally right up your element?
Oh, that's going to be me tonight. But by the way, that band on stage at Ace Ventura 1 was Cannibal Corpse.
Yep, yep.
And that movie helped really propel the death metal scene in Florida, in South Florida at the time.
I just loved it because here he goes, you know, next thing you see him, like, you know, flipping off a couple of people when he finally gets to the hallway that he needs to down there. So I just get the feeling that's a little bit with you tonight. South Carolina's at Vanderbilt tomorrow. That's a 4 p.m. kickoff up there in Nashville. And South Carolina is a favorite of 2.5 points. The over-under is 54 on this game. And it's an important football game, Diesel, because here's the thing. You cannot, if you're the Gamecocks, make your way through these next two games in which you go to Vanderbilt this week and to Kentucky next week at 0-2. You really, if you have hopes of getting where you want to go this year as a Gamecock fan, you really need to go 2-0. But my question is, we now know that it's a completely different ball club with Kentucky. They end that 31-game winning losing streak to Florida. Do you think South Carolina can make it through these two next weeks against Vanderbilt and Kentucky on the road without losing either one?
I think South Carolina loses one of those two games. I don't know which one, but I think they'll lose one. And let me preface that by saying I wouldn't be surprised if they won both.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm betting that South Carolina is going to lose one.
And you know what this feels like? With the stat that we gave earlier, that South Carolina is looking for their 10th consecutive win against Vanderbilt. That you know, 9 is their longest winning streak against anybody in school history. So it feels like maybe Vanderbilt wins and somehow finally that they can pull the win over Kentucky up there, because I think Kentucky owns a 5-game winning streak on the Gamecocks right now. When we were up there 2 years ago, Price and I, That game was 10-7, and that's what precipitated Will Muschamp in the off week coming up after it in moving Jacob Bentley into the starting lineup as a freshman. So this much I know. I feel like South Carolina is going to have to score. I mean, listen, I get it. I went to Alabama. I'm not the smartest guy out there, but they got to score points. I don't think this is like South Carolina can go to Nashville and win this game 16-13, because I just don't see enough on that defense that if you get in one of these games in which you're on the field for a long amount of time, that even Vanderbilt might not be able to take advantage of it. Now, Vanderbilt has a running back by committee, if you will, but one of the matchup nightmares for the Gamecocks is Vanderbilt's tight end. All right. If you're a Gamecock fan, think about it from this perspective. The matchup nightmare that Hayden Hurst provided for the Gamecocks last year, that's some of what South Carolina is going to deal with when it comes to Vanderbilt tomorrow. And the Commodores have a good quarterback, and Kyle Shermer, you know, a coach's son, doesn't really beat themselves. So it's going to this really is a big ball game over there at Vanderbilt. Now, my question for the Commodores and Derek Mason, they lost a very physical 22-17 ball game at Notre Dame this past weekend. Number one, they had a chance coming down the stretch. So have they been able to scratch that out of their memory? Number two, are they at this point under Derek Mason? We know he's a good defensive coach. We've seen it over and over and over again. But are they at a point that they can go physical like this 2 weeks in a row? Now, South Carolina is not that same kind of Notre Dame offense. You know, South Carolina right now reinventing itself, if you will. Because, again, I never thought I'd see the day especially with a guy not named Stephen Orr Spurrier roaming the sidelines in Columbia. They threw 31 passes in a first half as they did against Georgia. So, but, you know, the other thing that South Carolina has done well in this 9-game winning streak over Vanderbilt, there's that one game a year or a couple of games a year where South Carolina gets determined, we're going to stick to it and we're going to run the ball. Maybe we see that out of Rico Dowdle and group this weekend. But Rico Dowdle and group, and that includes those wide receivers, they've got to make plays, all right? I will give Will Muschamp, I don't like excuses, but in defending his quarterback, as Will Muschamp did this week in his press conference, he's like, you take away the 7 flat-out drops that Carolina had against Georgia, which includes there on the opening series when Georgia picks off the deflected bounce pass that went right through what Rico Dowdle's hands and runs it back. You take away those flat-out drops, and Jacob Bentley was completing at least 75% of those passes there. So, again, going to be interesting for South Carolina. And here's the thing. You got to worry about Vanderbilt this week. You can't worry about Kentucky the following week. And listen, you better be worried about both of them, because Kentucky looks a little bit different this year, no doubt about it. Also, Clemson, they head down to I-85 to take on Georgia Tech. They have won 5 out of the last 6 against Georgia Tech. But, of course, it's been Brent Venables since he's come over that's made the difference. And number two, Clemson's got more Jimmies and Joes than Georgia Tech does. So that should be kind of the situation when it comes there. Now, we're going to talk about Clemson and Carolina with Gene Sapikoff here in the next segment. But don't forget the Furman Paladins. They got a chance to cleanse their palate, and they should do that Saturday evening up in Johnson City, Tennessee, as they take on East Tennessee State in a Southern Conference game. East Tennessee State, of course, still rebuilding their program. Furman, desperate need for a win. Clay Hendricks' squad, you know, of course, nobody expected them to win the opener with Clemson, but also nobody expected them to go up in week number 2 and get hammered by a ranked Elon team 45-7 up there in North Carolina. So, of course, Furman's game with Colgate was canceled at Furman this past weekend due to Hurricane Florence. And again, just like South Carolina needing to erase the memories of that Georgia loss at Williams-Brice a couple of weeks ago, Furman desperately needs to erase the memories of that 45-7 loss to Elon. And quite frankly, East Tennessee State may be the exact recipe in which to do it. Also, don't forget, Wofford, they are off this week. The Terriers are off as they went out and gave a valiant effort last week at Wyoming, falling right there at the end on a touchdown to Craig Bowles' Cowboys. Wyoming got the 17-14 win. Wofford heads into the bye week at 2-1 before they get back at it next weekend. So that's kind of a wrap-up on your, you know, FCS, your Palmetto State games right there. The one I want to talk about real quickly before we go off the break, Diesel, and we might hit it after Gene Sapikoff. You were probably in Boone in college back in the – when did you get out?
2007.
All right, so you're old enough. You say the game that soaked you into college football was the Southern Cal Texas Rose Bowl game in which Vince Young delivered the Longhorns there.
That's right.
All right. Do you remember growing up how the football world would stop on the third Saturday in September when Florida and Tennessee would get together?
No. I don't really remember that matchup being that important.
I mean, every year it determined the SEC East winner. I lived in Knoxville. I mean, Knoxville, watch out. The blue invasion would happen when Florida came up to play in Knoxville. And it was a lot of fun because I didn't have any coin in the game, no scratch in the game. I lived in Knoxville. I wanted my friends to be happy, but I didn't really care. And, I mean, Florida back then, they bring 12,000-13,000 fans to Neyland Stadium, more than their allotment of tickets were.
Sure.
Florida was allotted 7,500 tickets for Saturday night 7 p.m. kickoff in Knoxville. How many of that 7,500 tickets did the University of Florida sell through their ticket office?
Ooh, I'm going to bet they didn't sell them all.
No, they didn't. I'll give you credit. But do you think they reached the halfway point? Do you think they reached the three-quarter point?
I think they sold maybe 4,000 of them.
They sold 2,600 of an allotment of 7,500 tickets.
That's bad.
Now, again, it's a little different day and age from back then. You know, digital television, if you will, has made it a lot easier to go, well, I got this 65-inch TV. I can sit here and watch it. I'm not going to spend $1,000 to go up to East Tennessee. Back in the day, the Florida fans would love to come up here because, number one, when I say here, I mean Knoxville. Number one, every other year they were getting out of the way of a hurricane, you know what I mean?
And they escaped the heat.
Thank you. They would love to come up and stay in the mountains and make their way. So that's how far this Tennessee-Florida game has dropped off. On the other side, the flip side, Diesel, Tennessee would take more than their allotment to the swamp. Again, this either Florida or Tennessee over about an eight-year period, that's who won the SEC East. Last year, Florida gave Tennessee 8,500 tickets for their game in the swamp. How many do you think Tennessee sold last year in the final year of Butch Jones's tenure?
2,000.
3,700. So my point being, right now, Tennessee fans probably a little bit more into football because remember, they had Butch Jones last year. Now they're all excited again. Jeremy Pruitt turning things around. But this is, we talked about losing streaks earlier. Yeah, longest playoff drought in the NFL and all. Think about this. Tennessee heads into this matchup at 7 o'clock Saturday night on an 8-game SEC losing streak. Florida heads in on a 6-game losing streak. Unbelievable. Having lived in there and witnessed this game and witnessed this rivalry back in the day, I never would have thought that it would come to this. The Florida Gators at 2-1 headed up as a 4-point favorite to take on the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll talk about that with Gene Sapikoff as well. And Clemson, South Carolina, and a whole lot more is the legendary sports columnist for the Charleston Post and Courier joins us next on Straight Up with Sturge. Yes. Also, he's the columnist. He's the college sports editor for the Charleston Post and Courier. And quite frankly, Diesel, I can't speak for you. He's in a lot better shape than me. It's our friend Gene Sapikoff. You can follow him on Twitter at Sapikoff. That's S-A-P-A-K-O-F-F. Gene, hope you're doing well. Can you believe we are now September 21st into the college football season?
Sturge, October is the greatest month in sports. Maybe March, but I mean, you're going to have the heart of football season, playoff baseball, just a little sprinkle of basketball, and we're almost getting there. So yeah, this is really cool time right now.
So let's start with the Gamecocks at Vanderbilt. Gene, a couple of weeks ago, a lot of the national media and the local media was jumping on the South Carolina bandwagon headed into that Georgia game, which, you know, I'm glad I didn't get on it, but South Carolina desperately needs to erase the taste in their mouth from that Georgia game. But Vanderbilt, a physical team. I mean, I'm kind of fascinated how the South Carolina fortunes have changed, that this road trip to Vanderbilt this week and Kentucky next week more or less will define their season.
Yeah, and like you said, Vanderbilt, talk about a change of thought for people. I mean, a week ago, I wasn't sure what to think about Vandy. They play Notre Dame very closely, could have won, outgained the Fighting Irish by a good margin, and that was even with a 3-turnover deficit. This is going to be a good Vanderbilt team. South Carolina is better than them at every single position, including special teams, except maybe the most important one, where Kyle Shurmur is going to play in the NFL and had a better season last year than Jake Bentley. And if he has time, he can pick you apart.
And you know, what is the narrative when it comes to Jacob Bentley? Because I made the comment headed into the Georgia game, this was his time to shine. This was his time to announce. He was going to be one of these quarterbacks that maybe we talked about in the national discussion. But, of course, he didn't get any help from any of his teammates in that game. But is the spotlight getting brighter on Jacob Bentley as the time runs out, that it's time to deliver something special?
Well, he did have 5 drops, and Georgia, one of the top 3 defenses in the country, I'll say, with its Clemson and Alabama. So let's see. My thing with Jake Bentley is he's gradually improved since he's got to South Carolina. The thing is that gradually sometimes is a little hard to take for Gamecock Nation, because it's not those sudden leaps. But I saw some things from Jake Bentley, even against Georgia, that were better than things I saw last year and the year before. For instance, he didn't come out all hyped up and overthrowing people and getting too excited. I still believe in him. I think he's good. I don't know that he's going to just make these leaps and bounds improvements that people want from him. And I'd like to see him have a signature win over a ranked team.
I'm with you as we continue with Gene Sapikoff, the legendary sports columnist of the Charleston Post and Courier. Give him a follow on Twitter at Sapikoff. Now, I cannot go anywhere right now, Gene, in the upstate, that somebody knows me, that they say, they don't walk up and say, what's wrong with Clemson? And I don't have an answer for it, because I'm not sure right now there's anything wrong, because I thought we had some pretty good discussion earlier this week. Clemson, the coaching staff, I think, is as worried about numbers, and I mean getting numbers of players on the field, as they are points on the board, because they are going out on the recruiting trail to these guys and saying, if you come in and do what we ask, we're going to get you some playing time early. And if they don't live up to that, that will bite them on the recruiting trail in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that's great, because when you're coming down that stretch in the regular season and then when you're in the postseason, you need all the fresh bodies you can get. So I have really liked that philosophy that they've had, Sturge, not just this year but the last couple of years. But as far as the what's wrong with Clemson thing, they got the close call against Texas A&M, which I'm not sure that wasn't their toughest game, and if not, the next toughest game might be South Carolina, and that's a problem, because you're just not really sure how they're going to do against a really good team until they show that they can do better than they did against Texas A&M.
I'm right there with you on that one. And, you know, right now you look at Syracuse next week with another win this week, they may find themselves in the rankings. So, unfortunately, Texas A&M has to go play Bama, and it just does not end well when Nick Saban takes on one of his assistants for that assistant. So, Clemson has got to be a Texas A&M fan for the rest of the year and hope that's a game that keeps giving them a push.
Yeah, and I think Texas A&M will do better than people thought in the regular year. But I still just think that with Clemson's soft schedule, they don't need help from anybody else. And frankly, they could probably lose a game. And as long as they win the ACC championship game and they're going to be in the playoff. The thing is, that's not good enough for Clemson fans. Mm-hmm. They want to be in Santa Clara, and I think that's the reasonable expectation. Winning the national championship, that's icing. I don't care what anybody says. But if they don't get to Santa Clara with this team, these quarterbacks, it's disappointing.
Yeah, and, you know, Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence, let me ask you this. You know, I went to Alabama, and Diesel gets mad at me. He's like, you like to say that. But, you know, Nick Saban coming off the field after the Louisville game, he got a little bit upset about that quarterback question. Admitted he didn't handle it well. But you watch how Tua and Jalen Hurts, they're each other's biggest fans, and you see the same thing between Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. So do these coaches – I get it. Dabo handles things differently than Nick Saban. Do these coaches at a time have a right to go, you know, you guys are creating a bigger deal about this because look how the team itself is handling this?
I mean, in both situations, it's been good for the team because the two guys in both situations, they're pushing each other to be better, and it's been positive. In defense of Nick Saban, who really has always been pretty good with the media overall, I mean, he has his cynical, mm-hmm. you know, jokey things. We all laugh about what he says about the press conference, but basically the kind of access he gives you in answering questions and stuff, he's been fine. His issue with Jalen Hurts is he didn't want him to leave.
Right.
And I don't think there was ever a chance that Kelly Bryant was going to leave, at least not after spring or once this season got going. So of course, Dab was a little more relaxed about this than Nick Saban is.
You know, again, as we begin closing up with our buddy Gene Sapikoff, legendary columnist for the Charleston Post and Courier, just follow him at his last name on Twitter, Sapikoff, Sapakoff. And Gene, you know, one of the games on y'all's pick'em contest, the pigskin picks down there in Charleston, was this Tennessee-Florida game this weekend. And, you know, I was trying to explain to Diesel, who's younger than me, when I lived in Knoxville 20 years ago, the South stopped when this game played. You know, it didn't matter if it was Knoxville or Gainesville. It literally stopped. Can you believe Tennessee heads into this game Saturday night on ESPN with an 8-game SEC losing streak and Florida comes in with a 6-game losing streak?
Stunning. And, you know, so many great games in the series. And for me, never better than the Peyton Manning, Steve Spurrier, Phil Fulmer, and those days when those teams were, each one of them ended up, you know, with a national championship during that stretch. But, you know, the loser of this game, it's going to be tough for them to dig out mm-hmm. in the SEC East, even if you think the SEC East isn't that strong. Florida, boy, Felipe Franks, they beat Colorado State 48-10. He did not have a very good game, and he's yet to prove himself that he can beat a good team. Tennessee, you know, if they lose Jeremy Pruitt, obviously in rebuild mode. On the other hand, Sturge, the winner, hey, they got something to hang their hat on in this division. They're not going to beat Georgia, but maybe they can finish second.
All right, I want to give you props. 2 days ago, you wrote a column, and I think we are all tired of Urban Meyer at this point. You know, I don't take 5 times to apologize for one thing. I try to get it right the first time. You know what I mean? But you went back to why I get asked when I go out, there's some Ohio State fans that hang out at the one particular place I go, and they're like, why do you hate Ohio State? And I'm like, I don't. I just don't like Urban Meyer. Now, Clemson fans actually have a reason to, going back to the post game a couple of years ago after the Fiesta Bowl, when, I mean, it felt like Ricky Bobby saying, with all due respect, and the guy goes, you can't say whatever you want to with all due respect, but that's how it came out in the post game against Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl a couple of years ago.
a complete annihilation by Clemson. Just one of the best games Clemson's ever played. And it's going to be overlooked because of what happened in the next game, mm-hmm. beating Alabama. That Fiesta Bowl win over Ohio State was absolutely a work of art. Really just one of the two or three best games Clemson's ever played on a football field. But Urban Meyer, after the game, just refusing to give Clemson any credit at all. This is all about Ohio State, he kept repeating, all about Ohio State. Frankly, I mean, jaws are dropping in there. Like, okay, what about Deshaun Watson? He's a good player. That's all he would say. No credit at all. And I know for a fact, talking to Clemson coaches, that they were pretty stunned. Now, they had bigger fish to fry getting ready for Alabama after that, but that was just a classless post game by Urban Meyer after that game. And I think it showed something about what kind of guy he was. And I hadn't seen that from him before. I'd had to do things with him down at Florida because they've had some local players, Carlos Dunlap from here. And even when they played Clemson in the Orange Bowl, he seemed like a good guy, but wow. That was not a pretty thing for Urban Meyer there.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. All right, how do we make your suggestion here on Twitter happen about a half an hour ago? It says, ideas for colleges in the Carolinas. Stop with the free food for sports media covering football for the rest of the season and donate that money to the Red Cross. How are you guys in the Charleston area doing? I know it's a lot more up toward Myrtle Beach and all. You know, Coastal still not going to have classes next week. Nobody allowed in their residence halls at Coastal Carolina University. Do you guys come out okay in the Charleston area?
Yeah, we sure did, Sturge. Thanks for asking. But boy, those folks around Conway and in those little towns like Nichols, wow. That is a tough situation. And then, you know, even worse in eastern North Carolina. So I really do feel for those folks. And any money that we could, you know, help out with to the Red Cross or whatever other legitimate relief organizations, I'm sure would be appreciated.
All right. Listen, I always appreciate you, Gene. Hopefully we'll catch up with you in a press box later on this year. Tell us what you've got coming because, again, Grace Rayner, DC, everybody at the Charleston Post and Courier, that is one hell of a sports staff.
Thanks for mentioning Grace Rayner and David Cloninger, mm-hmm. who covers the Gamecocks for us. We will have full coverage of South Carolina at Vanderbilt and Clemson at Georgia Tech, plus, you know, the Citadel game, Charleston Southern game, all that stuff coming at postandcourier.com. We even will be staffing the Panthers game this weekend.
All right, buddy. I look forward to catching up with you here soon. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Sturge.
All right. There's Gene Sapikoff. Again, just go give him a follow on Twitter. Listen, he is legendary. That's why David Cloninger, our good friend who covers the Gamecocks that comes on with him, does such a great job. Grace Rayner, her work covering the Clemson Tigers as well. Very, very well done sports staff there at the Charleston Post and Courier. So, Diesel, when we come back, we've got open phone lines till the top of the hour. What are some of the other news coming out of college football? And do you really want your head coach, who you've already proclaimed one day before he ever won a game, that state's day going, it's going to get worse before it gets better? All right, Diesel, you heard in that Carolina's first team sports in Carolina's update, North Greenville at Delta State. You know I love to play these games with you from time to time. Can you tell me the nickname, the mascot name, the fight name, if you will, for the Delta State football team?
Aren't they the Yellow Jackets nope. or the Wasps or something like that? Hornets?
Nope. The Statesmen.
I
mean, can you imagine stumbling over that one, the Delta State Statesman? At some point, you're going to mess that big time. You know what I mean? So know that because I used to have to drive through there. All right, Diesel, what takes place at 5:40 in the afternoon that's usually not good?
Well, if college football programs are dumping news late in the afternoon on a Friday, it's definitely not good for the coach.
Yep. Maryland is now having a press conference. You can go follow it and watch it on the Big Ten Network. And listen, there are some people that should lose their job if what I am seeing on Twitter is coming out. I mean, you're talking after the first onset of symptoms with Jordan McNair, the offensive lineman, 19 years old, that passed away earlier this year, an hour and 40 minutes before he departed in an ambulance for the hospital.
Now, that's awful.
Let me make sure I get this correct here. This is from A.J. Perez that is tweeting the press conference. There was a 34-minute delay between when he first cramped and was taken off the field. The onset of symptoms and 911 call took an hour and 7 minutes. Onset of symptoms to McNair departing in an ambulance, an hour and 39 minutes. So it took them 32 minutes, Diesel, between the time that they saw the symptoms and made the 911 call that they put him in an ambulance and took him to the hospital. That 30 minutes could have saved his life.
Yeah.
Could've.
You know, we don't know the full extent of the details. I don't know if Maryland has a med school. I don't know if they got anybody else involved. I mean, clearly the training staff should have been there and on the situation, but you're right. Someone should have made the call earlier to get him out the door.
Yep. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Delvin's in. Delvin, welcome. I hope you're having a good Friday afternoon.
Have a great afternoon. How about you guys?
Kind of disgusted some of this stuff I'm reading on Twitter. I'd love to be watching the Big Ten Network right now.
Yeah, I watch a little bit of it right now. I'm about to get released, so that's why I was calling. I had to turn it off, but yeah, it's starting to get disgusting. Like you said, we just reached one of the finals they're talking about and stuff like that. So, but my question is this: I was coming to you with Friday. What's going to be the key for South Carolina and Clemson to put off some road?
Thanks, Delvin. First of all, when it comes to Clemson, it's attention to detail. Play a clean game. You're better than Georgia Tech. They're down a couple of offensive linemen to begin with, so just let that interior hold their place and don't get faked out of position. And guess what? Brent Venables has Georgia Tech and Paul Johnson figured out. Now, as soon as you say that, that's when you go, ooh, you know, because that's we like to call Paul Johnson a gambler from time to time, no doubt about it. So I think that's the key for Clemson. Number two, give the ball to Travis Etienne. You know, everybody keeps talking about the quarterbacks and Trevor Lawrence and Kelly Bryant. What about your running back there and Travis Etienne? Feature him. Give him the ball. Last week he averaged 10 yards per rush, Diesel. Let him finish off some drives. Now, you know, the question is, we were talking, what's good enough for Clemson fans right now? I don't know. I think probably a 4-touchdown win, but you're not going to probably get that. We shall see. South Carolina, number one, you got to get some help from the running backs. You know, Rico Dowdle really, first of all, you can't play, you never will place the blame for a loss on one player. But what really did not help was that pass out there on the sidelines that went through his hands, bounced off his helmet, over to the Georgia guy who runs it back for a touchdown. So you got to make those kind of plays. You got to make the simple plays, Diesel. Does that make any sense? You can't make the great plays and win the game if you don't do the simple things first. The other thing about South Carolina, run the damn ball. You know Vanderbilt's a little bit beat up coming off that physical contest last week. Run the ball. But for whatever reason, that's not in South Carolina's DNA right now. But they seem to discover it from time to time against Vanderbilt, thus the 9-game winning streak over the Commodores. So, again, to me, those are the keys. Jake Bentley, I agree with Sapikoff, you know, now in his junior year, you need to see him lead the Gamecocks to one of these wins. You know, time's starting to run out a little bit. Socrates, you know what I mean? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was on last night.
Love that movie.
Yep, to get Socrates in, or Socrates, you, us. Yeah, like then he comes back with
all
the days.
All we are is dust in the wind.
All we are is dust in the wind. And Socrates comes back with like sands through an hourglass. These are the days of our lives. I could not help but stop and laugh right then and there. All right, we'll come back. We'll continue. We'll try to find out. This much we know, or I tell you what, we'll save it for the other side. Maryland announcing what they're doing with their head coach as well. Yeah. All right, Maryland is announcing their findings of their football investigation. And listen, for the time being, DJ Durkin, who was on the field during the workout but was not involved in the care of McNair, according to this report. How in the hell can you be on the football field, see one of your players going through this, and not be over there as part of the care of it? All right, maybe you can go, well, I was letting the professionals handle your business. But, you know, even in the middle of a game, Diesel, when the guy is hurt bad enough, the football coach comes and walks out there, you know, before he gets carted off. So that might be. But anyway, DJ Durkin will remain on administrative leave until the university completes a second investigation into the program's culture. So that just means for the time being, DJ Durkin is still on set. That means they're dotting all I's and crossing all T's, in my opinion. So they are now stating that cold water immersion could have saved Jordan McNair's life. You were talking about that earlier before the show, some kind of challenge, you know, jokingly. Cold, just having a cold bath there could have saved the kid's life. I mean, they failed this kid and this family on so many levels, it's not even funny.
They certainly did. I get it's hard to diagnose that on the spot, but at the same time, you know, you have to err on the side of caution.
Absolutely.
You have to. That had to have been one of the first things they did. You know, get him on the sideline, get him in the shade, get an ice pack on his head. They have that right there on the sidelines for games when guys get overheated. So why didn't they have that on the practice field? Why did they not have ice packs ready to put on across his body? You know, I don't know where they put him. They put him on his head, on the back of the neck, on the shoulders.
Why do you make an effort?
Yeah, they should have done whatever they could do to get his core temperature down as quickly as possible. If that includes putting him into an immersion tub, if that includes calling, you know, 911, getting him to a hospital immediately, certainly things could have been done to save Jordan's life.
And again, just go follow by AJ Perez on Twitter. He is all over this, including he works for USA Today. He is an investigative breaking news reporter. The timeline just makes you want to throw up in your mouth a little bit. So let's have some fun before we get back on track here at the top of the 6 p.m. hour with our buddy Eric Boynton from the Spartanburg Herald Journal. Nebraska football. Yeah, I'm not upset with Nebraska. Who I am upset with is their freshman quarterback, redshirt freshman quarterback that was not announced a starter, that cleared out his dorm, left the university, quit his football team 30 hours later, and Tristan Gibbia, whatever his last name is. And, of course, the true freshman gets hurt in the opener, and now Nebraska doesn't have a scholarship quarterback available to play right now. I do have an issue, if you will, with the governor of Nebraska declaring Scott Frost Day on the opener, which got rained out. All right. But you don't declare Scott Frost Day for the state of Nebraska before you ever win a game as the Cornhuskers coach. So now we know they're 0-2 because Nebraska fans are already bracing for it, but this is their guy, and they may not be happy, but how do you think they now feel after losses the way that they have, that Scott Frost, in a story to Sports Illustrated's Andy Staples, says this is going to get worse before it gets better? Now, he's being truthful. You know, so many times, Diesel, you got to come in, you got to break something down, tear something down to rebuild it. You know what I mean? But you've already had Scott Frost Day declared for you, and Mother Nature goes, no, uh-uh, we're not doing that. So they rain out their opener, and then they come back, and now they're 0-2. So, again, Scott Frost, probably not in Derry. He's telling the truth because Nebraska opens Big Ten play with a road game in Ann Arbor against the Wolverines, but interestingly enough, not a good start. All right, Daryl's got some fascinating information for us. Wants to talk about Jordan McNair. Daryl, I hope you're doing well.
Hey, thanks, sir. Just Coach
Nance. I know it took me about two. I got to read Daryl's. Excuse me. I got to read Diesel's typing. As soon as I saw Greenville County, I'm like, oh, it's Coach Nance.
There we go. Hey, I just wanted to kind of chime in on that with taking care of student athletes and kind of what we do in Greenville County Schools. Our athletic trainers are so prepared to handle situations like this. All of our schools have a cold water immersion tub. You may be aware that we had a kid this year in Greenville County Schools that did have to get taken to the hospital. Mm-hmm. But our trainers were right on the scene. They immediately put him in cold water. And they do pack them in ice when the situation like that. You pack ice on ankles, groin, wrists, neck, head, you know, anywhere you can get really close to big veins to right. cool down that body temperature. And our ATCs did that, and our young man's going to be fine. But it was, you know, it's very serious. And, you know, my wife even asked, she goes, why do you think that happened? And because our daughter's an athletic trainer.
Right.
And we were talking about it. I said, well, look at it this way. The head coach makes millions. The strength coach makes hundreds of thousands. The athletic trainer makes thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times those athletic trainers are in a position where, you know, they're kind of intimidated maybe to step up and say something. But you are 100% right. That was preventable. The timeline is atrocious. And the outcome is the absolute worst.
Yeah, kids.
And I'm
dead.
Just grateful that we do in Greenville County, that our ATCs and our relationship with Greenville Hospital System and Stedman Hawkins, you know, we all have the AEDs. All of our coaches are trained in first aid, CPR, all that stuff. I want our people to know we're doing the right thing here. It's very unfortunate what that young man in Maryland had to endure.
All right, so if you as the athletic director for Greenville County have rules and situations in place for this to happen, then there is no defense of Maryland in here. But even more that bothersome to me, Yahoo Sports just tweeted out 5 minutes ago, Coach Nance, DJ Durkin was on the field but did not walk over to even attempt to provide any care. Now, I'm not saying he's a trainer, but when you got a guy going down like that as a head coach, should you not at least walk over there and check on him?
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, there may have been a situation about rules, about what mm-hmm. his contact could be and all that stuff. I'm going to tell you what, that goes out of the window when you start talking about player safety.
Yep.
Nothing trumps player safety. That kid promised, you know, to come and play for you. You promised to take care of him to his family. And I don't care if he had a bad day at practice or if he was soft, whatever word you want to use. I'm going to tell you what, when that kid gets sick and that kid needs help, you take care of that kid.
Absolutely. Listen.
You know, you coach kids. You don't coach football. You coach kids.
Yeah, and listen, you just made a lot of parents a lot happy, Coach Nance here. Thank you for the phone call that their children are being protected. And since it is Greenville County Athletic Director Diesel, let's remind Malden families one more time, their football club is having a car wash and hot dog sale on Sunday at the school to raise money for pregame meals, equipment, things of that nature that, of course, our budgets in the county don't cover. That was great. Thank you. Next level, Coach Nance.
Yeah, really. And to know that high schools at this level have that kind of equipment, it's unfathomable that Maryland didn't have that system in place as well.
It makes it that much worse for the University of Maryland.
Colleges are supposed to be that much better.
Absolutely. All right. We will we'll continue this conversation. Up next, Eric Boynton from the Spartanburg Herald Journal.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.